This hour of the show brought to you by Sportsman's Bar and Grill in Flagstaff, Arizona.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show.
All right, welcome to The Jeff Horovitz Show on this Thursday afternoon. This is Mark Howitt. I'm sitting in for Jeff today, who is taking a well-deserved day off. We have a great show for you lined up. Tons of stuff to talk about. We've got the State Fair this weekend. It's Labor Day weekend. A lot of people have a three-day holiday in the State Fair, which is always a favorite with my kids because of all the animals they get to see. That's a great thing to take your young kids to. I've got a six-year-old and a four-year-old, and they just love that stuff. Going to be talking with Daniel Witt this hour about his work with Global Books for All. It's a German organization called Operation Mobilization. He is a chief engineer by trade, and he is now volunteering with this group. We'll be talking about that, and we'll also be talking about the very important Jones Act. Very controversial. I'll let Daniel explain what that is later in the show. But basically, it's an act that allows only American ships to go port to port within America. In other words, if you take a ship and you go from New York City to Miami, you need to be an American-built ship, staffed by Americans, and run by Americans. And we'll be talking about that later in the show. But first, I want to welcome my guest, Daniel Witt. Daniel, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about yourself. From knowing you personally, you're a ship engineer by trade?
Yes, right. So I went to a maritime academy back in 1974 to 77, and graduated as a marine engineer and been doing it ever since.
And so you worked with what's called the Merchant Marines.
Correct.
I'm a little bit familiar about that because I had an uncle in that after World War II.
Oh.
And they played an important role in World War II, as
correct.
I recall. I think they started after World War I. Is that right? In the 20s, the Merchant Marines?
Merchant shipping's been around for a long time.
Long time. But
yeah.
Is that an official group, the Merchant Marines? Is it a government organization? Tell me a little bit about that. What is the Merchant Marines?
So they're just merchant ships, and we just carry cargo. Could be liquid cargo like tankers, or could be containers or loose bulk grain. Even passenger ships are part of the Merchant Marine. So you have the deck department, which would be the captain and the mates, and then you have the engine department, which would be the chief engineer and the engineers underneath him. So I work in the engine department.
So Merchant Marines, is that separate from just general guys that work on ships in general? Is it a separate group, or is any American working on a ship part of the Merchant Marines?
Well, right. I mean, there's Merchant Marine all over the world, but on American flagships, you have people working there, and you have to be licensed. You just can't all of a sudden say, I'm going to buy a ship, and I'm going to, you know, crew it up with Mark Howitt and Jeff Horovitz and Joe Schmuckatelli. You have to have license, and the Coast Guard is our regulatory body. So the Coast Guard issues licenses. You have to take a test and training and all that. So, and there is a Merchant Marine Academy that's just like West Point, Annapolis. And it's a federal academy. I didn't go to it. Mark Kelly, our senator, did graduate from the Merchant Marine Academy in 1986.
Oh, interesting.
I went to a state academy. I had to pay for it, not like Kings Point.
Gotcha. Where is Kings Point?
Kings Point, New York.
In New York, okay.
Yeah.
So if I went out and bought a big boat and put a water slide on it, I can't just start a cruise line just
correct.
Like that.
Correct, right. Because then there's licensing, then there's insurance. You have like American Bureau of Shipping, Lloyd's of London. There's all these people that will insure your ship, and you got to make sure that the machines are up to date, your radar works, and so they have it's not just all of a sudden just buy a ship and crew it up with your friends and go off. There's a lot of things involved in that.
And even so, we see these horrible accidents. I mean, there was, you know, the various oil spills we've seen before, cruise ships getting, you know, hitting land, basically.
Right.
There was that issue in the Suez Canal, which I forget what exactly happened there a few years back, where a ship got sideways or something and blocked up the canal for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that was a car carrier out there in, I think, Savannah, Georgia. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so even though some people pass, apparently not everybody's on top of their A game when they're
correct, right? And ships accidents happening all the time. Even as we speak, there's something going on, but just doesn't make the news unless it's an oil spill or, you know, something catastrophic.
So we see all the time in the news lately about the air traffic controllers are insufficient for all the planes going on right now. And we're talking about near misses in Phoenix and other airports. Is that a thing with shipping? Are you out in the middle of the ocean going across the Pacific and near misses?
Yeah. So there's, you know, I'm not in the deck department. I'm not a mate. But, yeah, so you have radar, and then there's near misses and stuff, especially you get into, like, the English Channel. I mean, there's just ships going back and forth.
Right, and it's a narrow – or the Straits of Gibraltar, right? It's really narrow.
Straits of Gibraltar, the Hormuz Straits. That you, I, sometimes I'll go on the bridge and look at the radar, and it's just like – wow, where are all these ships? They're just going back and forth. And so you have rules of the road that you have to follow that the mates and the captain are aware of, and other people should. You have navigational lights, and but some of those, there's things that happen, yes.
So interestingly, a buddy of mine was, I think he was part of the second group of swimmers that did the Straits of Gibraltar. They swam across from Spain to Morocco.
Yes.
And I think it's like 8 miles wide there, from what I recall. And one of their big issues was, so as part of the swim, they're not allowed to use a boat or anything to hang on to except to rest and eat.
Huh.
They can't get any forward momentum with it. But one of the issues was you've got all these cargo ships, cruise liners, all going through that narrow strait, and they're trying to swim and time their swimming to not get run over or sucked under a wake or whatever. Which I thought was crazy scary and also an amazing feat to get out in the ocean and swim 8 miles. But a long time ago, I was told that sailing ships have the right of way because they're not under power.
Correct.
But I'm also looking at that like a big cargo ship's not going to stop on a dime if a sailing boat gets in front of it.
Well, and I think they both sort of see what's going on. Again, I'm not a mate, so I don't really know what goes on up there. But I have heard that sailing ships do sort of have more of a right-of-way than something that's powered by an engine.
So old-school shipping movies, you know, you'd see the guy say, you know, "Wit, full speed ahead."
Yeah.
You know, and they'd go down to the engine room and you'd pull a dial or push a button.
Right.
Is that realistic or is it all computerized now?
Yes. In the old days, you used to have a engine order telegraph. You really didn't have the voice tubes like in the old – I mean, in the old days, but you usually had an engine order telegraph where you'd ring it up, you know, half ahead, full astern. But now everything's pretty much bridge control. But you also have that for standby in case the automation doesn't work. So then they'd
shout down or telegraph down or whatever.
Right, something happens. Then you have, like, sound-powered telephones, which are doesn't require electricity. It's the vibrating of your voice generates electricity. So even though the ship's black, you can still communicate with the bridge or the steering gear room or wherever.
So I'm going to oversimplify that. That sounds like two kids with, like, two cups and a string.
But it's pretty amazing. It's your voice just vibrates a little magnet back and forth over a conductor, and it generates its own electricity, so you can talk.
So in your experience, have you ever had something like that happen? The ship just blacks out, and they've had to merge
in? Blackouts, yes, but not we're out in the middle of the ocean, not like where we're navigating, you know, in a passage, you know, going through a river or something like it, going up the Mississippi. No.
Okay, gotcha. We've got to take a short break, but we'll be right back with my guest, Daniel Witt, and we'll be talking about Global Books for All. It's an interesting topic in the midst of today's censorship debate, and we'll also be talking about the Jones Act. Right back in a few.
All right, if you get a rock chip in your windshield, I want you to remember to always call Diamond Auto Glass first. This is where Angela and I take our vehicles to get the windshield repaired and, if needed, and we've needed to do this a couple of times, get the windshield replaced. Once you get a windshield replaced at Diamond Auto Glass on 4th Street in Flagstaff, you got lifetime chip repair. No appointment necessary. Most chip repairs take 10 to 15 minutes. Always remember to call Diamond Auto Glass first. At 928-779-4140. That's Diamond Auto Glass at 928-779-4140. Or go to thedifferenceisclear.com.
All right, we are back. I am Mark Howitt sitting in for Jeff Orvitz on this Thursday. My special guest is Daniel Witt, and we've been talking about shipping and some of the details on that, but we're going to get into what he does now that he's a retired ship engineer, and he's working with Global Books for All, which to me is very interesting considering today's issue around censorship and the debate around that and what should be censored and what shouldn't. Obviously, anything obscene needs to be kept out of the schools in particular, especially elementary schools, high school students don't need to have that stuff put in front of them by teachers. But Daniel's doing something very different. He is helping to bring books to countries around the world. You're currently working with Operation Mobilization in a subgroup of them.
Is GBA Ships.
Does that stand for something?
Good Books for All. It's a German charity.
And so they have a ship or multiple ships that...
They've had multiple ships in the past, and Logos Hope is the one ship that I've dealt with. And then just recently they bought another ship, and they call it Doulos Hope.
So Doulos, isn't that mean like slave or something?
Servant in Greek, yeah. And okay. Logos means word.
Word. So you volunteered. I don't know if you get paid for this.
No.
So volunteer.
Right.
And you're serving as an engineer?
Correct.
On the ship. And what do they do? They're German-based. They've got books on board?
Correct.
And you go to different ports. Tell me a little bit, what does that look like?
Okay, so if you go to their website, it talks about knowledge, help, and hope. So they have books. They have books that are, depending upon the economy of the country that they're in, it goes up and down. If you're in Hong Kong, the books are a little more expensive. You go to Djibouti or to India, the price comes down to whatever the local economy is. And so people can come on board and they can buy books. They can be secular books. There's Christian books. There's Bibles. And they can buy books. And at the same time, there's young people on board. And they go ashore and they have like eye clinics where you get glasses from Lions Club and you kind of have, can you read this? And they have samplers of different eyeglasses and they can match them up with eyeglasses. They also do volunteer work like at an orphanage, painting an orphanage or helping a library. And they'll have teams before you get into port and they'll line up local pastors and they'll come on board and have pastors conferences and things like that. And just sort of build relationship with people and give them hope as far as, the Lord Jesus, and they enjoy it. It seems like every port we go into, we have good reception. They were just in Basra, Iraq.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and the people of the Iraqi people just had a wonderful time on board and wish them the return.
So the ship, obviously, if you go to Iraq, you've got to have books in Arabic.
Right.
And if you go to other countries, if you went over to Iran, you're going to have to have books in Persia. If you go to Egypt,
French.
It's a different language. It's still Arabic, but it's a different dialect. Do you carry all those books at once, or are you restocking?
They have elevators that they have like a book hold, and there's just all these different books, and they have elevators, and they bring books up and down. And plus, so many people want to learn English. A lot of the books are in English, and they want to come on board and try their English and make friends. And English is just the trade language in, the shipping industry. All ships, pretty much English is the trade language. Aviation, English is the trade language. Finance, English is a trade language. If you really want to make it in the world, people know you've got to learn English. So they come on board the ships and they want to make friends with people and try their English out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because if you are in a foreign country, your best chance of really getting ahead in business and in life is to know English
as
a second language and be as fluent as possible. So they come on board. Is there like a library where they could sit down at tables and read, or do they just come in and get a book and leave the ship, or...
Oh, yes, there is a library for crew members, but there is also just, they come in there, they look at books, they peruse up and down, they have children's books, they have books on technology, they have books on finance, they have books on marriage, relationships, they have all different kinds of books. They buy it, And then there is a section where it's kind of what they call the iCafe, where they sell popcorn and ice cream, and they can interact with the crew members. They come on board and they'll play guitar and then they'll go off. But there's really not an area that they would sit and read a book that they bought, but there is an area that they could buy ice cream, popcorn, and talk with the crew members.
So you had described this to me before we got on air about the ship is a fairly big ship. I think you said it was used to be a ferry. Is that
yes,
correct?
It used to be a ferry.
So we're talking 100-foot long ship? Or
no, 450, 430 feet long.
Oh, we're talking about like the size of a destroyer, military, like a big military ship, right?
Well, I mean, ships are twice as big as that, but
you get the giant Carnival cruise line ships and
right, yeah, they're
carriers.
Monsters. Yeah, this isn't that. We've gone to ports before where there'll be a cruise ship next to us, and our ship looks quite small.
But 400 feet's pretty big. I mean, that's no
yeah.
And I'm guessing it has a lot of capacity because it used to be a car ferry, so it would have to carry a fair bit of weight. So
right, and they converted the where the cars used to sit. Into accommodations and then the book fair, book holds. So they modified it. And a lot of Christian ministries, like Mercy Ships and stuff, they do buy pre-owned ships that were probably ferries because you kind of have that big void there and they can, make it into what they want.
Yeah, it's almost like a van conversion ship size, right?
Yes.
Big empty slate, so to speak.
Yeah.
So has there been... You've been to a number of countries in the Middle East with this group, right?
All over the world, not
all
just
over the world.
Middle, yes.
Okay, so pushback from any of these countries? I mean, Iraq is a Muslim country. You show up with books, all kinds of books, but also Christian books.
And yes.
A Christian ministry,
yes.
Correct? So
yeah.
Is there pushback from the government saying no?
Sometimes we'll get into port and they'll come on board and they'll say... like if we're going to a Muslim country, they'll say, okay, this atlas has pictures of Israel. You can't sell those. So we have to put that away. They'll say, okay, put the Bibles over in this area, and this is only for Christians, not Muslims. But then Muslims will be interested, and they'll come into that one section where the Bibles will be at.
Okay.
But, by and large, they pretty much, approve of the books that they have. They were in Libya, and they came on board, and they just were pretty open as far as what they wanted as far as books goes. And, we haven't really had them saying no. The only time we ever had no was we went to Saudi Arabia, and we were alongside the dock, but they didn't let us open the book fair. But they did let us come in, but through different things, we weren't open to our book fair, but we were tied up alongside the dock.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, I was wondering that Saudi Arabia is especially an interesting case because, from what I understand, the government is leaning a little more, I want to say liberal, a little more open, but then there's also a strong Muslim undercurrent that they kind of give place to, I guess.
Yeah.
What you mentioned about Israel is interesting, where a lot of Arabic countries, or Muslim countries, I should say, still don't acknowledge Israel as a state, so they don't want it to appear on a map because that legitimizes their existence. Obviously, the UAE, Jordan, Egypt have all made peace with Israel. Saudi Arabia, to some extent, also now.
Yeah.
So it's curious that some countries are like, no, we don't. You can't have that atlas because it shows the state of Israel.
Right.
Seems a little crazy, but... it's, and I even, kind of on a side note, I heard that the new Barbie movie catered to the Chinese. They showed one little map of China in it, and they showed the Chinese territorial waters, which was actually international waters, as being part of China.
Yeah.
And they had to do that to get the movie into China to sell it, which was, you would never think in that type of movie, but...
just like with the Top Gun movie, I guess Tom Cruise had... Taiwanese flag on his leather jacket.
Oh.
And the Chinese didn't like that he had a Taiwanese flag.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that. I'll have to look for that.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because they don't acknowledge Taiwan as a separate country. It's to them, it's part of China that's just...
Well, I was looking through a girl on the ship, though, on Logos Hope. There's like people from 40 different nationalities. And there was a gal from China there. And I said, well, let me look at your passport. And so she showed me her passport. And, you know, on the U.S. passport, we'll have like a buffalo, we'll have an eagle, you know, kind of in the back on a page, kind of subdued. Yeah. Well, they would have provinces as far as China. Well, they had Taiwan.
As one of the provinces.
As one of the provinces in their passport, you know, one of the pages there. So they're, this is ours.
And so, and that's still their attitude, is it? It's ours. And they fully plan to get it back at some point.
Yep.
A little bit scary. Have you been to China with this?
Have not.
Or any of the, I should say, Far Eastern countries?
Have where what?
Eastern Asian countries, China.
Sure.
Not Myanmar, China. Vietnam, any of these?
No, you know, I've been to Taiwan. I've been to the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand.
I'm guessing they're not just bouncing back and forth. They probably are on some kind of consecutive order of countries they're going to, right? They're not just going Iraq,
right.
Taiwan, back right. to India.
Right. And this is also on, when you say, have you been to these countries? I've been there on commercial ships and I've been there on, you know, Christian ships. But so getting back to Logos Hope, they do have a sequence. Then they have, if you go to their website, you'll be able to see what their future ports are and then a port history of where they've been.
So how did you get hooked up with these guys? And can other people who are semi-retired or retired or maybe students can get onto this and go serve for a while? Tell me a little bit about that.
So how did I get involved?
Yeah. That would probably be a good example for how other people could, I'm guessing.
I was 22 years old, and I was a non-Christian, and I got off a ship in the Philippines, in Manila, and I just thought, well, I don't really want to go back to the U.S., and so I always enjoyed bicycling. So I bought a bicycle in Japan and the saddlebags, and I got off of Manila and flew to Brisbane, Australia, and pedaled from Brisbane down to Melbourne. I flew to Tasmania, pedaled around Tasmania, then flew to Christchurch, New Zealand. And then in the South Island of New Zealand, I became a Christian, that God kind of put a stop to my wandering. Well, in New Zealand, Youth of the Mission was very big, and they found out that I was a marine engineer, and they said, oh, Youth of the Mission just bought this old Italian passenger liner that they want to make into a hospital ship called the Victoria. You should go there. And I thought, well, this would be something important as far as this whole Christian thing that I became involved in. And so I went on to that, which became the Anastasis, which became part of Mercy Ships. And so I found out about that. Oh, I have a license that's desirable for Christian ministries that have ships. And then I got married and then heard about Operation Mobilization on a ship they had called Logos. And so I was sailing commercially, and so I'd be 4 months on, 4 months off, 4 months on, 4 months off. And on my 4 months off, if it worked out, I would volunteer with Operation Mobilization on their different ships that they had.
So you have a bunch of skills, obviously, for this, but if an average Joe like me wanted to go help out, are there opportunities for that on the ship that you're on?
Yes. So there's people who come aboard who are plumbers, who are carpenters, who are welders. You know, there's opportunities for anybody like that. You could be a plumber and not show up, and the ship could still sail without you being a plumber. But if all of a sudden the chief engineer doesn't show up, the ship can't sail. So they really need professional seafarers on there. But yes, there's opportunities for anybody to come on board to volunteer if they have a skill and a heart to serve.
Seems like an amazing opportunity. We've got to take a short break, but we'll be back in a few minutes to talk with Daniel Witt about the Jones Act. You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show.
This is the Jeff Horvitz Show.
Welcome back to the Jeff Horvitz Show. This is Mark Howitt sitting in for Jeff, who is taking the day off. My special guest is Daniel Witt. He has been working with Operation Mobilization on a ship called the GBN.
The ship is called Logos Hope and Doulos Hope, part of GBA ships. And if you want more information, you could go to GBAships.org and find out more about the ministry.
And we were talking about in the last segment about basically it's a book ship that goes around the world, docks at all kinds of ports, Muslim ports, Asian ports, all over the place, and lets people come out and get books. Over the break, we were just talking a little bit about the Merchant Marines and what they did and their importance, and we'll get into the Jones Act, which has been a little bit controversial lately, and it's been suspended a couple times in emergencies. But the Merchant Marines played a huge role, especially in World War II, before America really got militarily involved in the war. We were shipping things over to England, military spies, even on the Lufthansa was the famous one that the Germans sunk, but it turns out we actually had arms on that as well, shipping over. Tell me a little bit about what you know about the Merchant Marines back from World War II and the importance of them in national defense today.
Well, in the conversation you mentioned about your uncle from Denmark, who was involved as far as the Merchant Marine in World War II, and that he couldn't go back to Denmark. And my father was shipped from San Francisco to Fiji Island in World War II on a Dutch ship called the Klipfontein. And a lot of countries that were occupied by Nazi Germany, they couldn't go back. So you were a merchant seaman, you were on a Dutch ship, you're on a Danish ship, and you couldn't go back, and they were like stateless people.
Yeah, so real quick, what happened to my uncle from Denmark, he was on a ship called the Denmark. It was a four-mast schooner, big old sailing ship. Right before World War II broke out, they had sailed, I believe it was into the Caribbean or the Bahamas. Anyway, got over here on this side of the world. World War II broke out. Nazi Germany occupied very quickly Holland, Belgium, Denmark, all of that. He couldn't go back home, and he ended up entering the Merchant Marines on behalf of the U.S. and eventually became a U.S. citizen through that and stayed here until he died at almost 90 years old. Actually, might have been just over 90. But anyway, he served bringing supplies of all types and including military weapons. But, I mean, it's more than military weapons. It's all types of supplies that need food to go to the Allies, food, medical needs, all this type of stuff. And you're saying your father also got involved?
No, he was a U.S. soldier. But the ship that was contracted by the U.S. government went and took this Dutch ship, the Klipfontein, and went from San Francisco to Fiji. And I've kind of looked up this ship called the Klipfontein, and they just did a bunch of work for the U.S. government. And it was a Dutch ship, but mariners couldn't go back to your home country. So you're pretty much, your country was your ship. You had to stay on board there. And my father just fought in the war. He wasn't a merchant seaman.
Oh, okay. He just happened to be on that ship.
Right.
Yeah, and that is an interesting. You don't even think about that looking back as people who are over just being tourists or people who are on cargo ships or whatever. You can't go back home all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Nazi Germany's taken over. And so we have an act called the Jones Act here in the United States. And from what I understand, it requires any ship going from port to port within U.S. territories, land, must be U.S. built and U.S. flagged and U.S. staffed.
Correct.
So that means, in other words, you don't see a cargo ship going from New York to Miami under any other flag except a U.S. flag.
Correct. All right.
And if they wanted to, they'd have to stop in Nassau or somewhere that's a foreign country, correct?
Right. Correct, right.
So a lot of what that does is helps maintain our Merchant Marine crew. So if a war does break out, we've got the means to have shipping to get things to where it needs to be. It's not just shipping either. It's airlines.
Right, right. Said they're called cabotage laws, and other countries have cabotage laws as well. But it includes also airlines. I know the Heritage Foundation. You hear it kind of quoted by certain people. They're against the Jones Act. Senator McCain used to be, when he was our senator, he was very against the Jones Act. So there's a real desire, especially with free market people, to get rid of the Jones Act because, it would be cheaper if you could hire, a Liberian flagship to carry cargo between New York and Miami.
That's one of the things I noticed when I've taken a couple cruises in my life, and it's never been an American flagged cruise ship.
Correct.
And it's because once you have an American flagged cruise ship, you're under America OSHA laws, wage laws, hours. Not, before.
Yeah, yeah, and even I was on a ship that was built. It's called Solus for Seaman's Life Out at Sea, and it was the standards were quite low as compared to if you built a ship with U.S. Coast Guard standards. As far as it's more expensive to build, but it's safer. And Carnival Cruise Lines is an American company based out of Miami, and they don't have any American flags. It's just an American company, but their ships are all foreign flag.
And the way they get away with that is they go from, say, Miami down to a Caribbean island or Mexico and stop at a foreign port
right.
before they come back to an American
right.
port.
Right.
And we've done that on Carnival and other lines as well, Norwegian Caribbean lines, all of these. And because, you know, a lot of the people working there are from the Philippines or other countries where the cost of living is extremely low and they don't have to pay them American wages or give them American treatment. They're working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and they think it's great because they're making a lot more money than they would in their homeland. But by American standards, it's terrible.
Correct. Right.
You couldn't live here on those wages.
Right. Yeah.
And so the
wages are different. The quality of the ship being built is different. It is a lot less expensive, but it's just, I think if we were to get rid of the Jones Act, there wouldn't be any more U.S. Merchant Marine anymore. And then in a time of emergency, you would say to a country, or not to a country, but to a company, shipping company, hey, could you move cargo for us, into the war zone? And they'll say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's going to cost me a ship, and I'm not going to risk my ship to go into a combat war zone to send my merchant ship there.
And, yeah, the great example is World War II. The U-boats were sinking merchant marine ships often.
Correct, right.
And because they knew they were bringing supplies to the Allies.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's a big danger to the crew, to the
right.
company that owns the ship.
Right.
But outside of even wartime, I'm thinking of the disaster in Maui right now. You need a whole lot of supplies to rebuild houses. They're not going to come from Maui. You got to bring them in from the mainland U.S. And so the Jones Act ensures that we have American flag ships that can take cargo from our west coast where we have trees, bring it to Miami to rebuild houses.
Right.
If we didn't have that, then we'd be saying, hey, China, hey, Indonesia, hey, Liberia, will you give us a ship to move stuff? And they'd be like, nah, it's not worth it because we've got other
right.
stuff going on. We don't
right.
want to. Right. Even if it's not dangerous, we're busy.
Correct, correct, right. And they have a part of a program that the U.S. government has where they subsidize American flag ship to haul cargo commercially. Under the understanding that in emergency, you would drop what you're doing and come help us out. So there's kind of this program that they have for tankers and container ships that they're working commercially right now. But if all of a sudden there is an emergency, because you're getting this money from the U.S. government, you have to be able to drop what you're doing and come assist the U.S. government, whatever they want to do.
Gold has been a safe haven asset throughout history. Jeff Horvitz here. In fact, gold has returned 18% over the last 3 years and 54% over the last five, which easily trumps government bonds and high-yield savings accounts. I protect my retirement by investing a portion of my assets in gold and silver, and I rely on Justin at Desert Gold Exchange for expert advice on the best way to invest and to always get the lowest commissions guaranteed. Desert Gold Exchange, based right here in Arizona, deals exclusively in physical gold and silver, not a piece of paper. As a family-owned firm, Desert Gold Exchange keeps overhead low so they can pass those savings on to you. Call to get your questions answered or to request your free investor's kit with no pressure and no obligation. Call Desert Gold Exchange at 888-852-4343. That's 888-852-4343. Desert Gold Exchange, our family serving yours. This is Jeff Horvitz, and if you listen to my show, you know that I recently had the blinds replaced in my house. And when we decided to get this done, obviously we called my friends at the Blind Brothers, and we weren't going to deal with anybody else because this is a great Northern Arizona company. They don't use subcontractors, so you know who you're dealing with. Now, the Blind Brothers came in. They laid out all the options for us. We picked out, my wife Angela and I, a great set of blinds. They gave us a great price. We opted to have them do the installation, which they can do for up to half off the price, as well as any other advertised specials. It's a great deal. They came in, they took out all the old blinds, got rid of them, hung the new blinds. They work perfect. We are very, very happy. I want you to do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers for a free estimate at 928-634-2423. I know you're going to be happy. That's 928-634-2423. Or go online. They have great monthly specials at theblindbrothers.com.
And I noticed the Jones Act has a couple times been suspended. For example, when the hurricane hit Puerto Rico and also Hurricane Sandy hit, and maybe even during Katrina, I'm not sure, but they were worried about, you know, obviously getting supplies to Puerto Rico, getting gas and oil when they were worried about the disruption in the American. And from what I heard, not a lot of ships, maybe eight actually were used from foreign flagged ships to get there. But there is the power of the president to suspend that if need be for an emergency. So if suddenly we say, hey, we need more oil, we don't have enough American ships to get it here, we can allow other ships to come in and bring it from, I don't know where, you know, down to the Texas refineries from wherever it might be coming. But it's only from port to port in the U.S. So when we get things from China, you can still be a China-flagged ship because it's coming from China to America. But if it's taking wood from the upper West Coast to Hawaii or oil from the north down to Texas, it has to be American.
Correct.
Flag ships.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned, I mean, there's ways around that all the time because you could leave New York, stop in Nassau, which is British, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then
Bahamas.
Yeah. And then go on to Miami that way.
So. Yeah. And then like the cruise ships up in Alaska, you know, there's Canada. They can go hit a, you know, go to Kodiak and then go to, you know, a little island there in Canada and then go to another U.S. port. You can kind of bounce back and forth up there.
Yeah, what you said about safety and American ships being required to be up to Coast Guard standards reminds me of my folks took a cruise to Alaska, and it was on a foreign flag ship, and, you know, they probably stopped in Canada to justify it. But the cruise ship caught fire, and people had to be evacuated. And it was kind of a disaster, and it makes me think, you know, I don't actually know what happened in that case, but it makes me think lower standards of safety, lower quality of build, lower paid employees, overworked employees that you wouldn't see on an American ship, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is there's a United Nations entity. I can't think of it now, but it's pertains to just safety for men at sea. So they have a certain minimum standard. Part of that is working hours. You can't work someone, you know, constantly. You have to have, you know, so much sleep. I think same thing with the truck drivers here in the U.S. They can't, they have to have so much time of rest. So they have the same thing now, but that's something new.
Yeah, actually, when I was younger and hitchhiking around the country, I got a ride with a truck driver, and all of a sudden the truck started swerving across the road. And I look over at him, and the guy's eyes are open, but they're rolled in the back of his head. And I'm like, hey, you know, wake up. And a very scary moment. And, you know, for that reason, they require logbooks and a certain amount of sleep with truck drivers to avoid those disastrous accidents.
Yeah.
And same thing with ships, obviously.
Correct.
If you crash a tanker or a cruise ship, it's a real mess.
Yeah. And a lot of times, they'll, the NTSB, the Coast Guard, they'll come on and they'll find out that it's usually overwork, you know, where guys are falling asleep. And so now they came up with these work hours, and the ship will pull over an anchor and get everyone, especially in the deck department, because they're working cargo a lot, and then they'll move on.
So the big benefit of the Jones Act is it provides a certain amount of protection to Americans, both in better quality ships and staff, but also in times of emergency, we have American shipping that can move American materials to where they need to be.
Correct, right.
The downside of the Jones Act, according to the other side, is that it makes things more expensive, because obviously foreign flag ships, lower labor cost, lower ship cost, everything's lower cost.
Correct, right.
And so you get lower cost goods.
Right.
But in my mind, economy, prices of things cannot be your first priority.
Yeah.
You know, if we're just looking for the cheapest price, then we should just export everything out to China and bring in all our goods from there. Forget manufacturing.
And there's people that want that, especially then even like one of the big lobby groups that are against the Jones Act are farmers, because they have grain exports. And so you send grain over to Egypt, let's say. And I was on a ship that did that. And so a certain amount has to be U.S. flag. Well, that cuts into their profit. So if we ever get rid of the Jones Act and get rid of the merchant marine, there would be more money to the farmers for shipping grain over to a foreign country than having to divvy it up with U.S. flagships. So a lot of times the farmers are against the Jones Act.
Everybody who's trying to make a little more money or just get by. And obviously we have a lot of farming, and we make a lot of food that goes out to a lot of the rest of the world. Two big bread baskets are America/Canada and Ukraine, which is another issue because they're having trouble with Russia getting their grain out.
Yeah.
Especially to Africa and other countries that need it. Yeah. The continent of Africa and also elsewhere.
Yeah.
Europe and whatnot. Daniel, thanks for your time. We're just about out of time today. The Jones Act, it's one I hadn't heard of till I talked to you. And, I like it so far. I think it would be bad to get rid of, but, it's definitely going to be a hot topic, I imagine, here.
Yeah. Well, I think when all of a sudden someone understands that it covers airplane as well, that you can't fly, you know, Turkish Airlines from Phoenix to Chicago, you have to fly it on an American flag carrier, that would go away too. And then people say, no, I think the Jones Act is important.
Right. And I like the safety of American protocols. You know, sometimes it's a little over the top, but.
Yeah,
The third world stuff scares me a little bit, and I've been on myself. Have been on kind of a sketchy ship in the in the Mediterranean, and I always start to question foreign flag ships. Anyway, Daniel, thank you for your time. You're listening to the Jeff Horvitz Show today. We'll be back in a few. All right, in the next hour, we're going to talk about just how many people actually work for the government. We've got the State Fair this weekend. We've got that horrible bicycle accident where an RV ran into a bicyclist on Lake Mary Road. We've got motorcycle lane splitting. And a number of other items to talk about, including Proposition 480 for the new hospital in northern Arizona coming up on the ballot. Stay tuned. We will be back after Fox News. This portion of the show brought to you by WT Wealth Management.
You're listening to The Jeff Horvitz Show.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of the Jeff Horvitz Show. This is Mark Howitt sitting in for Jeff, who is actually out going dove hunting with his son. That's a great thing to do. A lot of people think about weapons, you know, guns for self-defense, but actually hunting is a very big thing, especially here in the West, and dove hunting apparently is a thing right now. I'm thankful I got a elk tag. Don't be jealous out there for this for this winter, starting in December. Now, I'm a little bit worried that we're going to have that same type of winter we had last winter, where December has multiple feet of snow on the ground, because I've got, for those who know the area, 7E, which could get difficult depending on how close I get my elk and how far I have to haul that sucker to my vehicle to get him out of there. But I'm looking forward to it. First time I've gotten drawn tried archery hunting before. That's a lot more work than rifle hunting, and did not have any luck on that. But looking forward to this, my first big elk hunt. But congratulations to Jeff and his son getting out there and doing a good father and son thing of doing some dove hunting. Very popular thing in Texas where I grew up. You know, obviously, doves, you're mainly going for the breast, but you know, not so much leg meat on those things. But they are delicious if you've ever had them. Really good stuff. All right, this hour we want to talk about a couple things, a couple news items. This kind of just flew right by me without being noticed, but August 28th, so Monday, was the 60th anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, which he gave in Washington, D.C. About 250,000 people attended. The plaza up there was absolutely packed. August 28th, 1963. Here we are 60 years later. And I really do think this country has improved enormously concerning race issues. Things have changed. Yes, there's still problems out there. There's no doubt about it. We've still got a long way to go, but the ball has been moved down the field quite a long ways. You know, we still got a little ways to get to the end zone, to where we really have resolved these race issues. But wow, it's from 1963 till now, the changes have been amazing. Martin Luther King did a fantastic job. I know in his life, he got a little bit discouraged because, you know, he died. He was actually murdered in the 60s, April 1968. But he, even though he was discouraged, you know, 5 years after giving his I Have a Dream speech, not thinking that it's moved along far enough, I think he would be proud of how far it has moved along today. He would still no doubt be calling for increased change, I want to say, to make things better, because there is still racism, and especially you get into some of the deep parts of the South, you still see ingrained racism, and it takes a couple generations to change. You know, if we can get students in schools to stop thinking like their ancestors did and judging people by the color of their skin, we can really move on from this racist thing. And we all tend to, you know, when we see somebody do something wrong, the first thing we think is, are they from California? Or do they have a different color of skin? Or are they an immigrant? Or are they different than me? Is it a woman driver? You know, we think these things instinctively and we try like to make our stereotypes, but we've really got to get away from that stereotyping people. Stereotypes are bad. I'm just going to say it. If you stereotype somebody, if you prejudge somebody, you're not doing them justice. You know, everybody needs to be judged based on their actions individually, not as a group. We are all one people here, and not to be judged based on our color, whether we're rich or poor. You know, if someone does something wrong, they need to be judged for that. If someone does something right, they need to be rewarded for that or praised for that. And we need to continue to move in the direction of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. Again, that was Monday was the anniversary of that. Kind of a big week here. So Monday was Martin Luther King's 60th anniversary of I Have a Dream speech. And then on a different note, astronomically, Wednesday night, last night, was not only a blue moon, but also a super moon. It's when the moon approaches, you know, it's in a somewhat of an elliptical, strange orbit around the Earth. Sometimes it's closer when it's a full moon. Sometimes it's further away. So we had a super moon, blue moon, just last night. And I looked up what a blue moon, I know what a blue moon is. It's, you know, we have two full moons in the same month. And I tried to look up where did it come from that it was a blue moon. And I couldn't find that out. If anybody knows, you know, send us an email, talkwithjeff@icloud.com. Tell us the origin of the term blue moon. We know that it means two full moons in a month, but what is the origin and why do we call it a blue moon? Why not a pink moon, an orange moon, something else? Why this blue moon thing? I do know from talking to hospital staff, they tend to get, a little bit nuttier patients and a little weirder things happen in the hospital floors on full moon. And, you know, I don't know if we talk about lunatics is the word, and that comes from the word lunar, right? So lunatic is tied into the full moon. I don't know if that's really a thing, but it's definitely a trend that is seen in hospital floors, psychiatric wards, and just in general. We see lunatics come out on full lunar days when the moon is full. Anyway, tell us your thoughts on that one as well. You can always call in and leave a message, 877-971-3971, or email us at talkwithjeff@icloud.com. We do read all your emails. And if they're succinct, to the point, and enjoyable to be heard, we will read those on the air. They're really great to get your emails.
Homeowners all over Flagstaff trust Kelly Broaddus and her team to price your home correctly and market it to as many potential buyers as possible. With so many eyes on your home, the demand goes up and you can walk away with more money. When you're ready to sell, your only call should be to Kelly Broaddus and her dedicated team of professionals. Kelly and her team will take the time to sit down with you and discuss your selling goals. They're going to bring data from previous home sales to show you what you can expect during your home selling journey. Call the only agent that I would call if I needed to sell a home in Flagstaff and surrounding areas. Kelly Broaddus with Broaddus Properties Group, brokered by EXP. You can also find Kelly online. Google Kelly Broaddus, Broaddus, or get an instant evaluation of your home's current value without even talking to an agent. Go to NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com. That's NorthernArizonaFineHomes.com, or just call Kelly anytime at 888-446-5602. That's 888-446-5602.
All right, a couple things in news this week that were not very exciting. We had the RV accident on Lake Mary Road where an RV driver clipped the side of a road-riding bicyclist and knocked him into his group of friends that he was riding with. Several people went to the hospital injured. Thankfully, nobody has critical injuries, were life-threatening injuries, but you know, a number of broken bones, torn this and that, abrasions, you know, road rash when you're doing 30 miles per hour on your bicycle gets pretty bad. And this Lake Mary Road thing, it's been a real controversial topic around town. I just want to touch on it a little bit. There's been a Lake Mary Road ride group from Pay and Take and also single track bicycles here in town in Flagstaff that do a weekly ride, and they ride out Lake Mary Road, typically around Mormon Lake, and then back into town on Lake Mary Road. And they do ride in what's called a Peloton. And we're not talking about those indoor stationary bicycles, but Peloton is basically a drafting formation where the rider in the front takes the brunt of the wind, and the riders in the middle and towards the back of the group get to draft, meaning they basically don't encounter the wind resistance that the point rider does. And you'll see this a lot in the Tour de France. You'll see these big group of riders, and they're all lined up. And sometimes they're flared out to one side, depending on which way the wind is coming. And the point is that the rider in the front takes the brunt of it, and then each one behind gets a huge break in aerodynamics and uses much less energy. And in the bicycling world, they talk about watts, you know, how many watts you can produce and how many watts it takes to do a certain speed. And if you don't have wind resistance, you have to put out a lot less energy to get the same speed. And, you know, the guy in the front will eventually get tired and he'll drift back into the pack and a new leader will take over the front. It's very similar when you see like geese or any other birds flying south for the winter. They'll be in a Peloton formation. And basically the lead bird will flap until he gets tired and then he'll drop to the back and a new lead bird will come up. Same thing with bicycles. So what happened here on Lake Mary Road, they get in their Peloton and doing their thing. And Lake Mary Road has a fairly wide shoulder on both sides. ADOT has done a good job working with our community up here to provide a wider shoulder because it's a very popular place for bicyclists and also for runners. We have a lot of Olympic and elite athlete runners here in town that'll run Lake Mary Road training for their marathons, their 10Ks. Anyway, we get a lot of professional athletes up here, and we've got a lot of serious mountain bikers, road bikers, and in this case it was road bikers on Lake Mary Road, and they do have a wide shoulder, but sometimes that Peloton flares out over the white line into the lane of traffic. And a lot of people complain about that who are drivers and say, isn't that illegal? And there are a lot of laws that do come into play, and I do want to touch on those. This RV driver in particular, he was cited for not giving the bicyclist a 3-foot margin between his vehicle and the bicycle. So in other words, the state law in Arizona is that there's 3 feet required between the edge of the bicyclist, that would be the edge of his handlebars, and the edge of your vehicle, which means really the edge of your mirror, not the side of your vehicle, but the furthest thing sticking out, which is typically your side mirror. Your side mirror should never come closer than 3 feet, and really you should try to give a lot more than 3 feet. 5 feet's a lot more comfortable. But anyway, this group of riders was headed back into town, and they were going along at a pretty good clip. You know, they'll hit 30 to 40 miles per hour when they're going downhill on some of the sections of Lake Mary. and they were really moving along. And this RV went to go past them, and he did not give them enough room, and he seriously clipped one of the riders, which threw that rider into the rest of the group of the riders and knocked them all down. It was somewhat reminiscent of the Tour de France. If you guys remember, there was that lady that was holding a sign at the Tour de France as a spectator, and she got looking the opposite direction from the riders, and as the riders approached her, she was kind of stepped out into the middle of them, knocked one down, and it was a disaster. You can look it up online. It was, the crash was amazing. The carbon brakes literally smashed in half. Anyway, this accident on Lake Mary Road was very reminiscent of that. Damage to people, damage to bicycles. Thankfully, the RV driver did stop, and he did get cited for that, and he's going to have to deal with, you know, the various consequences of, you know, having hit a bicyclist and the damage caused. And we can get into talking about insurance here in a little bit. But the point is, when the even if the bicyclists do not stay on the shoulder and they get into the lane, they do have a right to be in the lane. Under Arizona law, bicyclists only have to stay as far right as is practical and safe, and it's in the view of the bicyclist. If the bicyclist feels like there's too much cinders on the shoulder, dangerous cracks on the shoulder, glass bottles. You know, that's a thing on Lake Mary Road. There's a lot of people that go out to the lake and they're drinking on the way out inside their vehicle, and they'll throw their bottle out the vehicle window and it'll smash on the side of the road. Other problems like that on the shoulder, where the bicyclist will need to go into the lane of traffic sometimes, and he has a right to do so. He can go as far into the traffic lane as he needs to feel safe, from road hazards on the road. And if he is in the lane, you've got to pass with safety. You do not have the right to hit him, obviously, or to cause him danger with your vehicle. He's got the right to be there. Now, with any motorcyclist or bicyclist, there is the two abreast rule. So if a bicyclist is in a lane or a motorcycle is in a lane, they're not supposed to ride more than two abreast, side by side. They can obviously ride several in a row, one behind each other. And the question gets into this one where you have this peloton. A lot of times there are more than two wide, but this is going to be a big question for the judges out there that are going to have to deal with these cases and the crashes and stuff. Is the group that's on the shoulder, do they count towards the two wide, or is it only the two wide in the lane? And my understanding, my thought would be, it'd be like any other lane. It's per lane, two bicycles. Anyway, in this case, the one bicyclist, he was clearly in the lane of traffic, and he had a right to be there. If he wanted to be, you know, there's no law against the bicyclist being in the traffic. They just have to stay as far right as practical for them. But, you know, you got to remember, when you're out there in a vehicle, RV, car, truck, whatever, you're surrounded by a metal cage, you know, aluminum cage, airbags, seatbelts, all of that. You're operating a big piece of machinery. You know, in my case, I drive a diesel truck for work. It's 8,000 pounds, and that's a lot of responsibility. And I take that seriously, because I'm in a very big, safe vehicle that carries a lot of weight and is very wide. And I have to look out for pedestrians and bicyclists and anybody else that might be more exposed. And obviously, even other people in other cars. But when you're in a car, you're surrounded by a box. When you're in a bicycle, there's nothing protecting you except the clothing that might be over your skin. You know, and like Adam Shimoni, our former city council member, and who also is on Flagstaff Biking Organization now, talks about it. We need more than a 3-inch wide line of paint for our bicycle lanes to protect bicyclists, because the person next to them in a car is not nearly as much danger as the bicyclist is. We do have a law in Arizona that protects bicyclists above and beyond the regular laws. And I think it's only like a $100 fine because of the risk to bicyclists or pedestrians, because they're at risk. They are unsheltered from the dangers of traffic. And if someone hits them, they've hit them with a machine into a pedestrian, basically. And so we've got a very light laws in Arizona about that. Other states have stronger laws. Let us know what you think. Should there be stronger person at risk laws in Arizona for pedestrians, bicyclists, and others who are on the sidewalk, skateboarders, whoever, sidewalk, side of the road, in the lane, if they have the right to be? Should there be a at-risk law that says, you know, the operator of a motor vehicle that hits one of these people is guilty of an extra crime because that person they hit was at risk. Now think about it. When you're in, oh, say you're in a Home Depot or any other home center, and the person is operating the forklift going around the home center, he obviously has a strong obligation to look out for the shoppers, because the forklift is a big piece of machinery and the shoppers would get seriously injured by it. Should that same type of thought carry over to the road? When you get into a machine, should you have more responsibility and more liability if you hit somebody who is not in a machine, a bicyclist, a pedestrian, a skateboarder, a one-wheeler, whatever? Let us know what you think. Talk with Jeff at iCloud.com. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
This is the Jeff Horowitz Show.
Gutter Helmet's been here on the show for 3 years now. There's a reason for it, because so many of my listeners throughout northern Arizona have found that this is the best, the number one gutter protection system out there. It's not one of those cheesy screens or the leaf filter that just gets clogged up with all the junk. No, Gutter Helmet's got 40 years of experience, offers the best manufacturer's lifetime transferable warranty on performance and material. If you don't want to clean those gutters anymore, you don't want to go up on the roof, then you need to call or text Carl, the Gutter Helmet Man, right now at 928-318-6555. Never clean your gutters again. In fact, if you call or text right now and mention the Jeff Horowitz Show, you can save up to 30%. Call or text Carl, the Gutter Helmet Man, at 928-318-6555. That's 928-318-6555. Or go to gutterhelmetsnaz.com.
You're listening to the Jeff Horowitz Show.
All right, we're back. This is Mark Howitt filling in for Jeff Horowitz, who is out dove hunting today. Just before that little break, we were talking about the horrible RV to bicycle crash that happened on Lake Mary Road, and several people had to go to the hospital. Anyway, be careful out there when you're driving. Look out for bicyclists, and if you are not, if you don't have the skills, or maybe you've even gotten too old and you don't have the true ability to drive a really large vehicle like an RV, consider not doing it. I know a lot of people get retired and they're like, hey, we're going to buy the RV, travel around the country. But we also know as you get older, your driving skills go down. Your reaction times go down. Your spatial awareness gets worse. Be serious about looking out for the safety of others, and don't be overconfident in your skills in driving a really large vehicle. Anyway, those guys were taken to the hospital. Thankfully, nobody was in critical condition. It kind of brings me to my next topic, which is Prop 480. Prop 480 is going to be on the ballot this November. It was a special election coming up. And what it is to allow Northern Arizona Healthcare to build a new hospital just north of Fort Tuthill, just south of, call it University Heights, the southern part of Flagstaff. They believe they've outgrown their current campus up in the northern part of Flagstaff, north of downtown, the Flagstaff Medical Center there. So they, instead of remodeling that campus, they want to build a whole new one. And they've bought land just north of Fort Tuthill. And what they're looking to do is rezone that land in order to build their hospital there. And it's more than a hospital. There's going to be outpatient care. They're talking about, basically hotel, restaurants, all kind, a whole hospital village there. And it's been very controversial. The city council approved the zoning change request, but then a group here in Flagstaff decided they didn't like that, and they got enough signatures to put it on the ballot. And then Northern Arizona Healthcare appealed that. They took it to court. The judge said, no, it could stay on the ballot. They took it to the appeals court. They also said it could stay on the ballot. So Prop 480, you've probably seen a number of advertisements. I've got them even on my Facebook page. They realize I live in Flagstaff, so they're spending money to promote Prop 480 to pass so the hospital can do what they want to do in building a new location down there. Now, it's very controversial. A lot of people say, hey, we don't need a new hospital. The hospital says, yes, we do. My take is maybe we do need a new hospital, or maybe we just need another hospital. We don't have a lot of competition up here in the healthcare system. Maybe we just need another brand of hospital. Let me know what you think. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote yet. Prop 480 coming up this November, special election. And I believe it's going to be mail-in only. Mail-in elections are an extra expense for our taxpayers. You know, we have to spend money to put that election together. However, it is an important aspect of our democracy is when our elected officials seem to be going a way that is not popular. Here in Arizona, you can gather signatures and put things on the ballot to block what they're doing, overturn what they're doing, all the way from the city level all the way up to the state level. And I think it's really a good thing. It's been misused in the past. There probably needs to be a higher threshold of passing voter initiatives rather than the normal 50%. If we're going to do something that overturns what the government wants to do, it probably should be a little bit higher. It probably should be 60%. And there's talk about making it harder, and the legislature's tried to do that. But it is an important thing, important part of our democracy, but it has been misused, and we could point to a number of examples about that. Flagstaff minimum wage might be one of them. Okay, moving on from that, there was an interesting story I caught. I actually read some of the alternative news outlets, and one of them is Al Jazeera. And what I caught was that an Iranian weightlifter was competing, and he made the podium. He got second place, and the third place person was an Israeli. And he acknowledged the Israeli, stood for a picture with him, and I believe even shook hands with him. This is in Poland, championship in Poland. So you got an Iranian on the podium and an Israeli on the podium. And for those who follow sports, international sports, you'll notice that the Iranians will never acknowledge or even shake hands with the Israelis. And the reason is they face so many threats back home. So this weightlifter, he got second in the weightlifting championship in Poland, but now is banned by his own country from ever competing again. And he is even banned from ever entering a sports facility again because he was seen greeting and getting a picture taken with the number three guy, the Israeli guy who got third place, just because, you know, they competed against each other. And he says, you know, hi, let's get a picture together. Wham. He's not allowed in his country anymore to compete for Iran or even to work out in a sports facility. How crazy is that? Absolutely nuts to me. Anyway, we will be back in a few. This is Mark Howitt filling in for Jeff Orvitz. Stay tuned.
This is the Jeff Orvitz Show.
This is Jeff Orvitz, and if you listen to my show, you know that I recently had the blinds replaced in my house. And when we decided to get this done, obviously we called my friends at the Blind Brothers, and we weren't going to deal with anybody else because this is a great Northern Arizona company. They don't use subcontractors, so you know who you're dealing with. Now, the Blind Brothers came in. They laid out all the options for us. We picked out, my wife Angela and I, a great set of blinds. They gave us a great price. We opted to have them do the installation, which they can do for up to half off the price, as well as any other advertised specials. It's a great deal. They came in, they took out all the old blinds, got rid of them, hung the new blinds. They work perfect. We are very, very happy. I want you to do your neighbors a favor. Call the Blind Brothers for a free estimate at 928-634-2423. I know you're going to be happy. That's 928-634-2423. Or go online. They have great monthly specials at theblindbrothers.com.
You're listening to The Jeff Orvitz Show.
All right, welcome back to The Jeff Orvitz Show. This is Mark Howitt filling in for Jeff Orvitz. As I mentioned before, he is out dove hunting this weekend with his son. If you're looking for good things to do this weekend, the state fair is happening. Stop by at Fort Tuthill, check out the animals, do some rides, get your state fair on. It's Labor Day weekend. Make sure you're safe out there. I don't want to hear about any drunk driving. Do family things. Do some good stuff. All right, as promised earlier, we're going to talk about just how many employees are in the government. And this kind of surprised me. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the week with Bruce Slidlinger, but there are roughly 24 million government employees. And that's out of 135, 136 million employees total. And when we count in the military, we're saying about one out of every six people is a government employee. So you find six people, one of them is going to be working for the government. And I instantly think, hey, it's got to be bloated federal government. And that's what we all tend to think. Surprisingly, our federal government, although we may consider it bloated, is actually possibly a little less bloated than it used to be and is not as bloated as a lot of your socialist and other countries out there. So the federal government makes up somewhere around 4 million employees, give or take. Okay? That's excluding the armed forces. You throw the military in there, that boosts it up a little bit. Most of your government employees are at the state and local level. So about 20 million state and local government employees. That is a lot of government employees. And so I was wondering, where are they all, you know, what are they working for? What are they doing? The biggest one is education. And I should have thought of this. 47%, almost half of your government employees are working in education. Almost 70% of those, 69% of those are your grade school employees. And then 30% relate to higher education and 1% relate to other education. I don't know what other education is, but anyway, a total of half of your government employees almost is education. So roughly 9 to 10 million are working in the education system. You've got a number in active duty military, that's 6%. You've got, and that's going to be your, you know, your National Guard, this sort of thing. Your hospitals make up 6% of government employees, not private employees. Interesting. And then you've got your police, fire, that sort of thing. The police make up about 5%. So, wow, education, 47%. So about half of your government employees are busy educating your sons and daughters. How do you like that? Do you like that? Do you like having public education? There surely has been a benefit to it, you know, free education for all. But now in Arizona, we have the ESA program, Endowment Scholarship Act, if I remember the acronym correctly, that basically allows the backpack of money, as Jeff calls it, to follow the student wherever they go. It makes sense, right? You're paying taxes, property taxes, into the system. And if you decide you're going to put your kid in private school or homeschool them, in the past, the money that's being paid to educate that son or daughter is still staying in the public system. Seems ridiculous. They'd be getting paid to educate your kid when they're not educating your kid, right? So the Republicans, thankfully, while Ducey was still in office, got a bill passed for the ESA that now allows really only about half of the money to follow your kid. So the average cost of educating a child in Arizona is about $14,000 a year. So through the ESA, $7,000 of that can now follow your child wherever they may be schooled. So if you take your child out of the public system and put them in a private school, as we have with our first daughter, or if you homeschool them, as a lot of people do, that money can now follow that child to be used for their education in those locations. And the argument came up saying, hey, you know, that's not enough to cover private school. Well, yeah, it actually is. You know, the ESA basically covers the tuition in full for our child. Now, the one mistake the Republicans did make is they didn't tie it to inflation. So as inflation goes up, apparently that number will not go up. And as the school budgets for the public schools get bigger and bigger, unfortunately, the ESA number does not increase along with it. However, it is an amazing system. Our current Democratic governor would like to get rid of it, but thankfully our legislature is controlled by Republicans by a narrow margin in both houses, the House of the Senate and the House of Representatives. Here in Arizona, we have the House of Representatives has 60 reps. The Senate has 30 senators, and each one has about a one-seat margin. For the Republicans did not get that big win they were hoping for in the last election in 2022. And a lot of them may be due to the huge influx of immigrants into Arizona. And I don't mean immigrants from south of the border. I mean immigrants from west of the border, a.k.a. the great state of California. So many people are fleeing that state because of their ridiculous policies, but then when they come to places like Arizona, Idaho, Florida, they try to bring those California policies with them as though they have so soon forgotten why they left California. Anyway, Surprising fact, 1 out of 6 people you're going to meet that are employees are working for the government, and most of those are state and local in some capacity or other, most of them in education. All right, got to take a quick break. Be right back.
If you're thinking about buying a home, don't waste your time being misled by teaser interest rates on the internet. The first thing you should do is call Kim Dawson at Nova Home Loans. As Arizona's largest privately owned mortgage lender, Nova Home Loans offers local decision making like a bank with better access to more programs like a broker. That saves you time, effort, and money. Kim's going to show you how much cash you really need and what price range you actually qualify for. With Kim's pre-approval letter in hand, sellers know you're serious. It's almost like having cash in hand. For purchase or refinance, call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458. That's 928-310-6458. And by the way, if you mention a Jeff Horvitz show, you can get $250 off the lender's fee at closing. Call Kim Dawson at 928-310-6458 or go to novahomeloans.com/Kim Dawson. Kim Dawson, NMLS 697411, Nova Home Loans, NMLS 3087, BK number 090242, Equal Housing Opportunity, subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply.
Okay, I've got to give a quick shout out to all my friends out there who are building new trails for our community. There's been a lot of trail building in the Flagstaff area, especially just north of Flagstaff, Mount Eldon, and Schultz Creek area. They're doing a trail building today at the new Ginger Trail. And if you're listening to the show, it's probably too late to get out there right now. But from 3 to 6:30 on Thursdays, they do trail building. They usually meet either at the Y or somewhere close. You can find the information usually through Facebook. You can look at groups like Flagstaff Biking Organization, the Trail Fairies, and others if you want to volunteer for one of those events. But big shout out to those guys. Always having new trails is good for everybody. You know, they're available for hikers, horse riders, bikers, bird watchers, whoever. Get out there, enjoy the trails. It's a great thing to do this weekend. You know, instead of thinking of Labor Day weekend as a time to get blasted with alcohol, think of it as a time to get out and enjoy some trails, the great outdoors with the family, as I hope to do with my family. Get out and do something good, maybe stop at the fair if you like that. It's probably going to be a little bit rainy based on the forecast coming up. Looks like we're still in monsoon season, which is a huge blessing. Don't complain about that rain. We need it. It's such a good thing. If you are out enjoying the great outdoors, one of the things I volunteer for is the Coconino County Search and Rescue. So in Arizona, under Arizona law, basically, the sheriff of each county is responsible to organize the search and rescue group, and it's usually a group of volunteers. Here in Coconino County, there's well over 100 volunteers who volunteer for this, and they get a lot of calls. And I just want to remind everybody, if you are out on the trails, if you're going hiking, biking, doing whatever, you talk about the 10 essentials, and I probably won't hit on all those, but I want to touch on a couple because people just seem to forget this. They rely too much on their iPhone, their Android, to be able to call in anytime there's a quote-unquote emergency. And we see this a lot. You know, I'll be outside and all of a sudden it's thundering and lightning. I'm thinking, yep, there's going to be a search and rescue call because I know there are people who have gone out unprepared. And it's one of the things you've got to bring in monsoon season is a raincoat. Come on, people. It's going to rain. You know, it's going to look like blue skies in the morning. And around lunchtime, a lot of times it clouds up and it rains. And not only does it rain, the temperature drops significantly. So bring yourself a raincoat. But in addition to that, make sure you have enough food and water with you. You know, food helps you keep warm when you're cold. You know, get those calories burning. And don't rely on your iPhone for your map. That is a big mistake that we all tend to do these days in this modern world, is we think, oh, I'll just rely on my iPhone for the map. And all of a sudden your battery dies or you don't get service and your map can't update. Bring yourself a paper map and preferably a compass. You know, you might think, hey, I can see which way I need to go based on where the sun is. You know, the sun is in the south and around noon. It's in the west, you know, obviously when the sun's setting. But what if it's all cloudy and you can't see which way the sun is? You know, you need to bring a compass with you. Bring a standard map, paper map, and a compass, a little extra food and water, and a rain jacket. And have a plan. You know, if you're going out on your own or even with a buddy, leave a plan. Tell your spouse, tell your loved one, tell a responsible party where you're going, especially if you're going to one of the more remote trails. Be prepared. You know, wear good footwear. We see a lot of that twisted ankle thing in the search and rescue world. It's, you know, wear suitable footwear. Don't go out hiking in your flip-flops or your, a lot of times even your tennis shoes are not sufficient. You need something that supports your ankles a lot of times. Be smart, plan ahead, and don't rely on your smartphone. Please, just don't do that. Smartphones are a great tool, but they are also, they make us dumber. The smartphone honestly makes us a lot dumber. We rely on it for way too much information. When we get in trouble, we no longer think self-rescue, self-reliance, how can I can get myself out of here? We think dial 911, and dialing 911 is a useful thing, but don't give up that ability to rescue yourself, get yourself out of sticky situations, because even if you can call 911, it might be a lot of hours before rescue comes, and it might be after dark, and you might get really cold, and hypothermia is a thing here in Arizona, even in the summer. You know, anybody who's been in Arizona knows the temperature can drop 40 degrees at night very quickly. I say in Flagstaff, there's really very few nights in the year where you don't carry a jacket. Almost always the temperature drops to where you need a jacket. And if you're up a higher elevation, you know, if you're in Prescott and you go up into the hills around Prescott, and even in within the city limits in Prescott, the temperature is going to drop. Same in Sedona. It's going to be warm right after the sunset, but by the middle of the night, it's going to get cold. Don't count on staying warm. Bring an extra layer, and especially in monsoon season, that rain jacket. Okay, I want to talk about one other thing. We had a new law passed in Arizona recently, and it's for motorcycle lane splitting. And I'm a motorcycle rider, bicycle rider, hiker. I do lots of fun things. I came to Northern Arizona to do fun things. And so one of the things you're going to see is motorcycles lane splitting now, and that is legal. So don't yell at them. Don't get upset. Understand it's legal, and it's actually safer, because what it allows the motorcyclist to do is to get the front of traffic and get away from traffic. One of the most dangerous places for a motorcyclist is in traffic in people's blind spots. Super dangerous. People tend to swerve without looking. They're texting with driving. They're talking on their phones driving. They're looking at their gigantic, 40-inch Tesla screen. I know that's an exaggeration, but it seems like those screens are getting bigger and bigger in the Teslas. Lots of stuff to distract you. And not to have your eyes open for people on two wheels, whether motorcycles or bicyclists. But, motorcyclists, they are allowed to lane split now in Arizona. There's certain details about when it's allowed, but don't get angry. It's a good law. It helps keep motorcycles safe. The other thing you might see a motorcyclist do that might get you upset as a car driver and someone who doesn't ride a motorcycle is you might see a motorcycle swerving back and forth in his lane radically. And you're like, what is that guy doing? He's a nut. Well, there's actually this thing in motorcycling, and if you had motorcycle training, you learn about it. You need to have your tires warmed up for proper traction. A lot of the way motorcycles do that is they'll weave in their lane to deliberately warm up their tires, especially when they first get on their bike. It makes their motorcycle a lot safer by having the tires warmed up. So if you see a motorcyclist weaving in his lane like that, don't get upset. Don't think he's a nut. He's doing it for safety. Don't get to be that angry person in your car. Remember, when you're in a car, you're in a heavy machine protected by a box, airbags, seatbelts, you know, all kinds of safety features. You have a huge responsibility. I talked about this earlier in the show. Be careful. And I am going to stress traffic safety, especially this weekend. You know, our big weekends, Labor Day weekend this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, other holiday weekends where people have three-day weekends, they often associate those with drinking. We see drinking and driving arrests go way up. And there will be probably roadblocks out there checking for drunk drivers. We ran into one out at Winslow coming back from East Clear Creek one time, and they were stopping every single person. And if they thought you were drinking, they were doing blood tests right there on the side of the road and taking you to jail. So don't be a dummy. Don't drink and drive. And be responsible in that big vehicle. It's a machine. Don't be arrogant. Don't be proud. Don't be a jerk. Be kind and take the responsibility you have for driving a huge machine. Okay, a couple of the things we want to touch on. The war in Ukraine. One of the things that I like to talk about when it comes to Ukraine is not so much the war with Russia and the U.S. and the proxy war we're doing and the money we're spending on that, But the fact that Ukraine is a breadbasket for a lot of the rest of the world, they produce a lot of grain, and a lot of it goes to Africa. And one of the things this war is upsetting is the shipping of that grain to the countries that need it. All right, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Jeff Horovitz Show.
Is the Biden economic disaster hitting your household a bit harder than you expected? Is inflation killing your personal budget? Now, Just Wireless was here for you in 2009, and they are here for you in 2023. Why would you pay full price for a new smartphone when you can get a great refurbished phone at Just Wireless and save a whole bunch of money? Or if you're like me, I've taken my smartphone to Just Wireless to get it repaired. They've taken care of cracked screens, charging port problems. They can also change out that battery. Check out Just Wireless's two locations in Flagstaff, across from the Flagstaff Mall, and also on Milton Avenue, right as I-17 comes into town. Stop on by today and see how your hometown, locally owned cell phone guru can help you save money. And also check them out at JustWirelessAZ.com. That's JustWirelessAZ.com.
I just realized before the break, I said it's time for a quick bake, and that was not what I intended to say. Don't get baked this weekend. Don't get drunk. Have a safe Labor Day weekend. Tomorrow we've got the weekly roundup, and then Jeff will be back from dove hunting for a fresh show on Tuesday. Be safe out there.